Hello and welcome to the Warp Podcast. My name's David Tiltman, and today, well, we're looking at something a bit different. We're looking at the business models of the marketing communications industry and why they've become an effectiveness issue. Now, this is the first of two podcasts we're going to do on this topic. In today's show, we're going to look at the problem with our guest, Caroline Johnson, who is co-founder of the Business Model Company. And in Thursday's show, we're going to be talking to two companies that have tried to make some changes. So before I bring on Caroline, I just want to set the scene a little bit. Now, if you're a regular listener to the Warp Podcast, you may have heard us talk about culture being a crucial factor in the development of effective work. We talk a lot about how you spend marketing money and how you measure it. But having a culture that allows those investments to be made and crucially to be seen as investments rather than costs sits behind all of it. Last year, we launched a white paper called Building a Culture of Creative Effectiveness that looked at how great marketing teams organize themselves around effectiveness. And if we extend that thinking further, we come to the relationship between clients and agencies. Another piece of work we did last year with a company called Appraise confirm that stronger client-agency relationships lead to more effective work. So we know this matters. But as anyone who spends time around this industry knows, there are a lot of problems here, which was what we're going to explore on this podcast. The big question we're trying to ask is whether the way clients and agencies tend to interact, and in particular the financial relationship between them, is actively undermining the creation of effective work. And if it is, well, what do we do about it? So at this point, I want to bring in Caroline. So Caroline, thank you for joining us on the Warp Podcast.
Thank you very much, David, for inviting me.
Before we get into that big, hairy problem that I just outlined, just explain a little bit about what the Business Model Company does and how you sort of work with clients.
The Business Model Company is a strategic consultancy that runs business model change programs for the creative industry and the global marketing services industry.
And your clients tend to be sort of marketing services organizations, agencies, that sort of thing? Or do you also consult on the client side as well?
We do both. We work across the whole of marketing services through media, creative, tech, design, content, branding, advisory, consulting, and also work with brands and advertisers, helping them design and operationalize new marketing operational models.
Okay, so let's get into this. I'll set the scene a little bit there. But from your point of view and the work you're in the weeds with both clients and agencies, what's the big problem here? Why is it such an issue, and particularly why is it such an issue now?
That is such a big question, David.
Yeah, okay. Well, we start with the big ones.
Let's start with the big one, shall we? I think if I try and concentrate that down to what we're really talking about here, I'm talking about creative industry at the moment. The business model is not fit for purpose. It hasn't actually been fit for purpose since it was designed and invented a long time ago. The reason we're talking about it today is it's become the burning platform. It's not only not fit for purpose for either the creative industry or the creative industry's clients, it's actually now in rapid decline. So for us, this is the year, and that's why I'm so glad we're doing this two-part series to not just raise it again as an issue, but more importantly, to hear from our clients post transformation, who can talk about their insights and their story. But I think for lots of reasons that I'm sure we all appreciate, the year of 2024 will be the year where you either successfully transition to a much more relevant, appropriate business model, or you suffer serious decline and pressure in the ability to maintain your revenues and certainly your margins.
So let's just break that down a little bit. So we're talking about the business model of the creative industry. What we mean by that is the what the creative industry is selling and how they charge that to clients. Is that a sort of good summary, or would you build on that?
Yes, that is a good summary. I mean, we define the business model in three ways: how you create value for your clients in the marketplace, how you deliver that value, which is your operating model, your talent model, and also how you capture value, which is your commercial model. But I think what's often missed when we talk about business models, because it will often be misrepresented as we need to charge properly or we need to charge more. What's actually missed is that at the heart of your business model is your belief system, your behaviors, and your values. And that is the place to start, because the creative industry operates on the wrong belief system. And that belief system is based around the things it believes you can and can't do. And that almost keeps us in this sort of state of paralysis, where we're not changing and repackaging our businesses and thinking about increasing our value to our clients. We're actually hiding behind the wrong belief system that our clients won't let us do this, procurement won't allow it, our competitors will always undercut it, that our existing clients won't allow us to engage with them in a different model. That whole belief system really does need to be challenged, because when you actually go through a program of transformation, the hardest thing you're facing is not what's happening in the marketplace or what your clients will or won't let you do. The hardest thing that you will face is your own cultural transformation and the change of your assumptions and your belief system. That is actually the challenge at the heart of business model change. It's a behavioral and a mindset transformation that is required first and foremost.
So you talk about belief systems, and I think you just articulated some of them there, but this is essentially about the idea that you just can't charge more for what we do, or the market is structured in such a way that we're in a sort of vicious circle of procurement-driven commoditization of the products we have. The market is oversupplied, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, is that what you mean by belief system? Because I guess that's the sort of standard narrative in the industry. Is that what you're trying to get through?
That's such a good question. I would answer that by saying it's very difficult to charge more for what you're currently doing. And what I mean by that is what you are currently doing is not what you should be doing. So the commoditization of the creative industry, the removal from aligning your business model and how you operate and deliver to the effectiveness of your creativity in your client's business, that has been severely threatened and put under pressure by the area that we are actually able to monetize, which is the lower value commoditized services. So I think trying to keep the services the same and the eye line in terms of value that you create low, you will not be successful in trying to charge more for that. So I think the step change starts with not we need to charge more. The step change starts with we need to be much more effective as a creative industry. We absolutely need to start with what is the highest value that we can aim for to be able to realize within our clients' businesses and our clients' business challenges.
Talk to me a little bit about the billable hour, because this often comes up as a sort of affliction of the industry that we need to somehow get past. Is this the problem, or is that a symptom of the problem? How do you view that as a thing?
I would say that we are valuing the wrong thing to start with, rather than truly valuing our creativity and the power of creativity to solve human problems, business problems, whatever it might be. We have reprogrammed ourselves as an industry to see our value in our effort. Mm. And what that means is that the behavior is around how many hours can we sell. And that fixation and focus from the monetization model and the costing model means that we value our effort more than we value our creativity. We've become completely disconnected in our business model from our creativity, because value now equals effort when you are selling the billable hour. And that then means that you are not in commercial and strategic alignment with your clients' needs, and you are unable to adapt to changes in the market because your monetization model and your operating system are completely out of kilter with what your clients and the market need from you. And that means innovation is almost impossible. And that's where the paralysis comes in.
There's so much to unpack here. So two questions on that. So the first one, I guess, let's start with this one. Is this a reflection of a lack of confidence in the product? Do we actually have confidence in what we're selling?
No.
No. Oh, that's a simple answer. The other question I want to ask on the back of that is really just sort of fleshing out what you've just said, which is that misalignment between what the client needs and what agencies are actually selling. Because that seems to me to be why this is such an important effectiveness issue. We have clients that need to be driving growth, that need to be showing that marketing is a key contributor to the organization's commercial success. And then we have agencies selling labor, which creates misaligned incentives that pushes into a sort of vicious circle of cheaper labor, poorer quality work, and you know, a growing divide between what the client needs and what the agency is actually capable of selling. Have I sort of summarized that
perfectly,
reasonably well?
Right, good. Perfectly.
Good. Okay. Right. I think we've sort of nailed right that that's the big problem. Let's start with what's happening in the market now. We've seen a lot of consolidation within the agency space, holdcos sort of merging big legacy agency groups. We've seen that in particular at WPP in recent months. How does this all reflect the problem that you've just been talking about?
I think there's a recognition within the networks and the holding co that traditional advertising agencies, there is no growth. If you're a traditional advertising agency, then at best, you might hold your position for a bit longer, but revenues are in decline and margins are on the floor. So they still need to extract some value. So the consolidation is an obvious next step to be able to create a little bit more efficiency and support and hold those businesses for a little bit longer, rather than looking at whole-scale repackaging, much closer alignment of the creative businesses with where the growth is in the industry, which is in the data platform and media sides of it, which, you know, which are much more relevant in a program, product and program model anyway, rather than rethinking the role that the creative businesses play in the growth sectors. There is whole-scale consolidation going across the whole industry to be able to drive a little bit more efficiency for longer. But ultimately, you can only do that for so long.
The holdcos are really challenged here, aren't they? This is a challenge not just to the creative industry, the creative agency business model, but to the whole assumption behind holdcos having multiple agencies and multiple different types of outfit.
Exactly right. And there's a really interesting polarization here. Our industry is oversubscribed with legacy service model businesses, but undersubscribed with remodeled, relevant post-transformation creative businesses. So we've got too much of the old model and not enough of a marketplace to serve all of those businesses who incidentally are also chasing the wrong revenue model. There is something really interesting around a much clearer industry-wide acceptance and understanding that the old revenue model based around agency of record is gone. We're chasing the wrong revenue model, and the market cannot provide big enough clients every single year that stay for long enough, that keep spending to be able to support the old revenue model. Moving into a much more flexible and fluid, agile revenue model where you are able to deliver value to your clients really quickly and efficiently and be able to monetize those quicker projects and lighter client engagements. That is the revenue model you need to move into. And that means also wholesale change in the operating system, the talent model, the commercial model as well. So there is a marketplace there. It's just the market cannot fulfill the old agency revenue model of really big clients, one every year.
So that is the model we're really struggling with. It's based on agency record contracts that are monetized through lots of people doing lots of work, and that's what you're charging for. So we're trying to get to a completely different model.
Yeah, it's gone. We need to accept that it's gone. There is an alternative model now, which is which matches the conditions in the marketplace and what clients want, but that demands standardized delivery, fixed cost base, productization, being able to sell program solutions, a really tightly defined commercial model, much higher value delivered to clients. You know, there's certainly a model. There's a model that is fit for the market, but it means you absolutely have to transition from the old model to the new one.
Let's come on to that new model in a moment, because I think there's a couple of other things I just want to touch on before we get onto the solution, if you like. And that is the other pressures that are coming into the market. So the first of those is rise of generative AI. We don't know how big an impact it's going to have yet, but it's going to have an impact. And then, of course, you've got over the past decade or so, you've had the rise of platforms, you know, like Meta, Alphabet, Amazon, who are increasingly offering self-serve options or new ways to get stuff in front of people that may be less dependent, allow clients to be less dependent on agencies, or, you know, in-housing, your creation of in-house units. So how does all this sort of play in? Is this just continuing to erode that sort of legacy model we've just talked about? Does it push us further down that sort of crisis line, or is there anything else happening that does it introduce new pressures that agencies maybe haven't felt before?
It's a perfect time, I think, to be asking that question. It's a really big question. Again, one of the belief systems has got to be challenged, and that belief system is that if you keep adding capability and buying in more talent, you will be able to grow and stay relevant. It's, again, the wrong belief system. So this idea of, you know, being full service and having lists and lists of services that are identical to your competitors, that is the fastest way to disappear and become irrelevant, because you actually have no differentiation. And you have therefore no relevance in this market. So I would say to any business out there, if you think that you are going to hold your position and be able to grow by buying in and investing in more and more capability, then that's not the place to start. The place to start is where do I have real relevance? Where can I add really differentiated value to my client base? And how do I prepare as best I can for the next sort of 1 to 3 years? And that comes back to the business model, investing in talent and capability and relevance ahead of any business model change is madness. It is absolute madness. It's a hope and a prayer. So the avoidance of business model change and that paralysis, that has to be overcome. And then with the right business model and the correct commitment to where your relevance is, where your value is, and why that is sustainable over the next few years, that area has to be examined really, really careful, because there is no future for commoditized service agencies. They just will not exist.
So just to sort of summarize that, if the underlying model doesn't change, then just adding new services in an attempt to be a one-stop shop for everything just isn't going to pay off. It's fixing the wrong problem.
It's throwing money at the wrong problem, and money you don't have, because no one is making enough profit to be able to do that in a sustainable way.
Is there anything the marketing creative industry can learn from other industries, whether other forms of applied creativity or elsewhere? Is there anyone who's actually got this right?
Well, lots of people have got it right. In fact, there is no other industry that doesn't have a commercial model. I mean, we don't actually have a commercial model. We don't have, you know, commercial parameters that we operate within. We chase revenue and profit is left to chance. And yes, of course, I mean, we can learn from the consulting businesses on how to monetize value delivered and how to realize business outcomes. We can learn from consulting businesses how to package up programs and sell program solutions. We can learn from product businesses how to create the right operating system and the right codification and standardization in delivery. And actually, we've always been able to learn from other professional services like legal. Lawyers have actually been very disciplined in terms of selling time, charging for every 7 minutes. And if you are going to charge time, then having standardized, controlled, repeatable delivery methodology and a fixed cost base, i.e. the talent that is applied to the service, will ensure that you can make money. So it's not that we can't make money from the billable hour. It's because we do not seem to have the discipline and the rigor and the commercial model in the setup of the operating system and the standardization that is required for that.
But again, that comes back to the belief systems piece, isn't it? It's about, and the confidence piece, the things we were talking about earlier, about do we actually have confidence in the product, and do we know how to charge for every 7 minutes, as you
exactly, as you exactly. And we created the we talk about the problem with procurement. We created that problem. Procurement didn't create it. We gave our costing model to procurement. Of course, they're going to drive as much value as they can and drive the value down because they can. But they did not create the problem. We have to take responsibility for the decline in our industry and the position we are currently in ourselves. It is a self-made problem. And again, that comes back to the belief system. It's too easy to hide behind the belief that the problem is in the marketplace. And when you do the second part to this podcast and you hear from Nick and Lisa, who are post-transformation, they will clearly say that what they assumed was going to be the hardest thing at the beginning was not what actually happened. The hardest thing is the internal cultural transformation. It's changing the internal belief system. The devil is on the inside. The devil isn't in the marketplace. And we have to take responsibility for that ourselves. The market is not going to come to us. We have to go to the market. And that means we need to change.
Now, as you say, we're going to hear in the second podcast from a couple of organizations that have tried to attack this problem. They are Huge, which is a sort of digital facing network, and Stick and Twist, which is more of a sort of boutique planning consultancy. We'll talk about those in a lot more detail in the second podcast. Huge is an interesting one, isn't it? And there's been a lot of coverage around Huge. It's a client of the Business Model Company. It's featured in Michael Farmer's book, Madison Avenue Makeover. And a lot of the talk there was around this word productization. You used productization earlier on the on this podcast. So talk to me a little bit about what it actually means to go from the sort of service model, the model we have at the moment, to a product model. What does that actually look like in terms of changing what it is that's being sold?
That's such a good question. In terms of changing what's being sold, the repackaging, if I start with the repackaging of the business, we talk about it as having to either raise the floor or raise the ceiling of creativity to deliver more effectiveness and to secure more business results for our clients. So the repackaging starts with a complete raising up of creativity. So if you think about it as how do you move your creativity out of the commoditized marketplace, raise it up as the superpower it deserves to be, and start working on the new story and narrative that you want to own and be confident in terms of the ultimate outcomes you can create for your clients. So to stop talking about what happens under your roof, which is your effort, and really start your story around what are the highest level of outcomes that we can deliver for our clients. That then brings you back to your delivery vehicle, and productization is the delivery vehicle for that creativity. And it allows a creative agency's clients to know exactly what they're getting, what the output is, the expected outcome of that output, what the cost is, and how quickly and efficiently that product and that output can be delivered. It's a much more transparent vehicle than the old service vehicle, which is how many people can we justify, how slow can we go, how inefficient can we be? I mean, you make your money from your inefficiency. That is not going to be possible in the future. So for many of our clients, there is a worry that they're going to go from a creative business to a product business. That is absolutely not what we're doing. We're going from a creative service business to a creative outcomes business. And to deliver more creative value higher up your value chain for your clients, then you need to have a different vehicle. And that vehicle is much better. The creativity is much better delivered in a program or product business model. And that requires repackaging, because you can't change the pricing of services and expect to win. It just does not work. So the services, that language around services needs to disappear. And the language around outputs and outcomes and value needs to be created from scratch. And you will only be successful in making in scaling your business or creating more margin opportunity if you transform the value you deliver for your clients first.
It's about outcomes rather than outputs at the start. So it's aligning yourself with outcomes rather than the stuff you make in the middle. Is that?
Yes. It's about moving from being fixated on the inputs, which is the effort and the people and the time.
Yeah.
To really understanding the value of the output in the client's hands, and then what is the utility value of that output, which is the outcome. So you might know what you're going to deliver for your client, but have you really thought about how your client then realizes or extracts value from it? So you really have to have a new language of commercial thinking and commercial accountability for how your clients extract and realize value.
Is the work changing? Is the sort of skill sets changing? I just going back to your earlier question about you can't just charge more for the same stuff. How is the stuff changing?
I understand what you're saying. The quick answer is it has to be completely different. I think we've lost focus on what we're actually delivering. I think we know what to service and we know how to justify what we will be doing, but we don't actually talk about what lands in the client's hands and the value of that. I mean, a service is we're going to, you know, put some man hours into this and we're going to labor away. When you move to a productization model, all of the old service language disappears. And you create, it's like learning a new language. I think that's the simplest way of talking about it. Everything changes. What you would know as a service list, because even if you do an audit, a competitor audit, something so simple as some research and insights, that's about effort. It's the process is the audit. What's interesting is what does that then deliver as value to the client? We've got all the language wrong. And I think what's so surprising always is the creative industry has amazing skills to create new narratives, to create new stories, to repackage our clients' businesses, to bring in the lens of their audience, the lens of the market. We are very good and very confident in applying the skills to our clients' business that we so desperately need to apply to ourselves. Business model change is about, it's a creative process. It's not a financial process. It's about creativity, storytelling, repackaging, and an absolute belief in the value that you can create. That is business model change. That's what we do for our clients every day. But we seem to be absolutely paralyzed in terms of being able to do that for ourselves.
What kind of pushback do you get to this point of view? Because it sounds great from a sort of finance and process point of view, but I can imagine, given that we're talking about creative companies, that you might get pushback that this is just about sort of introducing barriers to creativity, or you're trying to contain the creative act or something like that. Talk to me about pushback.
Well, actually, that's interesting. That's not the most common pushback, because I think for us, creativity has to be liberated and thrive. So, and we're really clear about that. You know, the creativity is so constrained currently in the wrong model that the liberation of creativity is something that it's the first thing we talk about. That's not the pushback. The pushback is this lack of accountability around our clients won't let us. I mean, I often get told, well, I can see this working in new business, but this won't work for our existing clients. It's just simply not, yes, that's harder, but it's not true. Procurement won't let us. And I always say rather cheekily at that point, are you 5 years old? You've got to see the ridiculousness of what we are collectively repeating as repeatable language in our industry. So the pushback is always the market won't allow us to change. And that is simply not true.
Now, look, it's very easy listening to all this to be very doom and gloom, but actually you describe yourself as an optimist around this. So what have we got to be optimistic about? What's the good news here?
There is so much good news out there, David. There is so much opportunity. We are working with incredibly committed, talented leadership teams who are absolutely smashing that change, and also enjoying running a business post transformation. So I think for everyone listening to this, I would really like to end on a positive note. I think AI is going to be very valuable to us because it is accelerating the pressure of change. And we need that. You know, we're very good when we're pitching. You know, we're very good in 24-hour stints. We're not very good in long-term change programs. So I think the market pressure is so acute at the moment that change is becoming a necessity, and fast change is becoming a necessity. And that's what we need. We need that push. So I think we're going to see more change in this year, positive change, than we have in the last 10.
Great. Well, let's put a pause on that until Thursday's podcast. We are going to be hearing from Lisa DeBonis, who is at Huge. And we're going to hear Nick Baker from Stick and Twist. And they're going to be talking about what they actually did to change this, to adopt some of that sort of product model that we've been hearing about. And what happened? What did it change? So we'll find out more on Thursday. But Caroline, thank you so much for your time today. It's been really fascinating talking to you.
Thank you, David. Thank you. Thank you very much. And I look forward to, I really look forward to part two.
Thank you, Caroline. Well, look, that's all we've got time for on today's Walk podcast. Join us on Thursday for the second part of this series. If you like what you've heard, then please do subscribe to the Walk podcast on your podcasting platform of choice. And if you really liked it, then please do leave us a review. Until next time, thanks for listening.